It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 476 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week is the return of a favorite here at the podcast, and that's Ed Jowett from Shades of Vengeance. He and his group are what I think a lot of us would like to be when we grow up, a very successful company telling stories in a variety of formats. He's actually got a few Kickstarters going on at this time, which we'll talk about, and of course I like to focus on the comic, which we do a lot, but we still discuss the others as well. Ed always has tons of excellent information, including how they manage all these Kickstarters and their projects. So please be sure to pay attention, because you're going to learn a lot listening to Ed, as I always do. There's a lot to get to in this episode, so let's get on with the show!
Hi everyone, Ed here from SOV Comics. We have always worked to bring stories to life in a way that inspires. And that means a huge variety of stories across our various universes, with diverse groups of characters. With a combined 4 decades of experience in storytelling and characterization, our creative team has published a huge number of different comics. This campaign is about a brand new arc, Disarmed. This story is about 3 mech pilots who are stationed together on a backwater planet. When something disastrous happens, 2 of them end up at each other's throats, and the 3rd goes missing. This 24-page comic is the first in a story of friendship, betrayal, mech battles, and revenge that you don't want to miss. Join us and help this dream become a reality.
It's great to welcome back to the podcast Ed Jowett from Shades of Vengeance, who is one busy guy. Got lots and lots of things going on. In fact, you were just telling me before we started to record, you've got, 3 Kickstarters going on right now?
Actually, as of recording, it's only 2, but we have just finished up 2 others, and we've got another one launching on Monday. So by the time anyone's listening to this, that's 1 or 2 ago, but yeah. We've got a bit of a confluence at this moment, yeah.
Which is cool. I mean, you know, I've never seen anybody do these many Kickstarters. You know, one of the things Kickstarter tells you is that you have to deliver your stuff before you can move on to other stuff. But obviously, you guys have been doing so much and getting so much done that you could go ahead and do that at this point, multiple Kickstarters.
So the way it works, actually, you're dead right. Kickstarter does not allow you to run multiple Kickstarters and usually does not allow you to run another Kickstarter before the previous one's been delivered. And the way that we deal with that as a team, as Shades of Vengeance, is actually a different person is responsible for each Kickstarter. So although I can talk about all of them and I'm kind of the creative director of the company, you know, there's Leo who deals with the audio with Zulian. There is John, who primarily, obviously, you've spoken to before. He primarily deals with the comics, and I primarily deal with the role-playing games. So with that kind of divided responsibility, it's effectively like 3 different people are doing these different Kickstarters.
Okay, well, that's good. But even though it's all still under Shades of Vengeance, it's still...
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, different people are responsible for it and making sure that it happens. And they're broadly they're completely independent of each other. So the time that I spend on, you know, an audio project won't affect the role-playing game project in any significant way.
Wow. In case somebody hasn't heard you before, why don't you talk about what Shades of Vengeance is, just to get everybody up to speed.
So Shades of Vengeance, it's kind of a complicated thing to explain. The broad concept began as creating tabletop role-playing games. But really what we're all about is creating universes. So while the tabletop role-playing games may provide you a door into that universe, I think the comics give you a window into that universe and stories that are taking place perhaps around the games that you're playing as a role-playing game. And the audio gives you a different window into that universe, or possibly, you know, a shared wall in a semi-detached house. So you can hear through, so you can hear through the wall. So really it's about expressing those universes in whatever way seems the best way of doing that. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that's comics, and sometimes it's a role-playing game, and sometimes it's an audio drama, and sometimes it's a novel, and sometimes it's you know, various other bits and pieces. We've got an art book for Era of the Consortium, which was offered for the first time with one of our audio dramas recently. We aren't closed to any media, basically. Any type of expression of the universe is on the table if we can figure out a way to make it happen.
Wow. That's really great for a creative process. I mean, you're telling the story in the medium that is best for it. So that's great.
Yeah, it really is a tremendous opportunity to express these universes. And whether you are, you know, whether you are experienced in that kind of media or not, we have a lot of people who are. So I knew nothing about comics when I first started with John. Not really. I mean, I'd read some, obviously, and I was enough of a fan to want to do it. But in terms of actually writing them, or the way in which to do it, or directing art for them, or what panels should look like, I knew absolutely nothing before I started with John. And now, we are, you know, 7 years later, 8 years later, goodness, just about that. And you know, we've published over a dozen comics. We've got another one on Kickstarter now, which I'm sure we'll talk about in a minute. And I have learned so much about the way in which to write comics that I've actually instructed other people in how to write comics, based on not only obviously what John taught me, but also my own experience from doing it.
How's John doing these days, by the way? Tell him hi for me, if you would.
He still listens. He still catches every time.
Okay.
He catches this every time I'm on, I know for sure. I can't say beyond that, but I'm sure he wouldn't just catch the ones that I'm on by chance, you know? But no, so I'm sure you just told him hi. But he's doing great, and Disarmed was very much his brainchild. He wrote it, and I did a little bit of editing on it, which is, I'm credited as an editor, basically, not as a writer on this. This is John. Disarmed was very much his brainchild. It's a story that he wanted to write. I contributed a tiny bit to it, but for the most part, this is all him. So he's doing really well, and we're loving continuing to produce comics.
Great. Okay, now you've introduced Disarmed. Is Disarmed one of the Kickstarters when this post is going on? Is that what's going to happen with this?
Yeah, I'd say that's probably this one's probably the major reason I came to talk to you. I mean, we can talk about the other stuff as well, but you know, I really think Disarmed is one of those that will be right up your alley, to be honest. Mm-hmm. Because you've talked a lot of times, you know, you like the fact that we have female protagonists. Well, there are, I guess, two female protagonists within this, although there is a third character as well. There are a lot of a lot of very complicated things going on, and you're very much thrust into the middle of it, which again is something that you've commented about our comics in the past. Mm-hmm. I sent you over the preliminaries for this, the first 10 pages, I think. Yes. And presumably you had a quick look through those. But
I did, yes.
You'll probably know that it kicks off with, yeah, these people are fighting, and it's clear that someone's died. Mm-hmm. But it's not very clear why they're fighting or exactly what happened. And it's one of those stories that follows two streams of time, one at the present and one in the past. And what happens is throughout the issue, the story gets gradually built up. And it's the first in a what we hope will be a series of issues. So it is not a case of, oh, you can just read this one comic and the whole story will become clear. You'll be a lot a lot more clear on exactly what's going on and what happened, but you certainly won't have the whole story by the end of this issue.
Because it's a fascinating story, because you're right. I love females, particularly strong female characters, because I don't think that's an explored area for comics. I think men we have done for decades and decades, but now it's nice to see like what you're doing with the women. I don't know what's going to happen, because with guys, I have a fair idea what guys are going to do at this point. But your women characters particularly are really fascinating to me, and I found Disarmed the same way. I don't know what they're going to do. And because I don't understand necessarily the female psyche as well as I should. But the thing of it is that to see what they do and to see they're not Lois Lane. That's one of my favorite things, is they are very much their own characters and their own people. And I love the fact that is who these people are and what they're up to. And I really, I saw about, I think, 8-10 pages.
Ten pages, I think.
And I was right away pulled into it. I mean, it starts right off with you talk about that dropping in the middle of the story. It's exactly how it starts out there. And there's a fight going on amongst some of the characters. And I immediately was like, what's going on? I got to know what's happening here. And then it shifts to a little bit more explanation as to what's going on. Do you want to talk about what the story is, the basic storyline is in Disarmed?
I think I can talk a little bit about it. Yeah, obviously I can't give too much away, but I think I can give you a little bit. Yeah. Okay. So, you know, we drop into sort of, there are two characters. There's Hunter and there's Turner. And they are mech pilots, disarm pilots. That it's a thing that exists in the Era of the Consortium universe. It's just kind of a mech about twice the height of a person. Very strong. And Hunter is an engineer. She was primarily stationed on this backwater planet, which we kind of explore in the past. Because she was the engineer who maintained these mech suits.
Right.
And then Turner and Sarge, they're both very clearly warriors, right? Right. Sarge, very much more experienced than Turner is. But Turner is you know, this very tough individual who, and she actually says to Hunter at one point, look, I'm sorry, I'm the fighter, you're an engineer, you don't stand a chance in this fight, back down.
Yeah, I saw that. Right? Yeah, that was cool.
And then at that point, what happens is Hunter has concealed weaponry on her mech suit, which she uses to attack Turner unexpectedly. And what that fight is about sort of the battle of training versus ingenuity in the situation.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that's really what their fight is really all about in terms of the way in which the fight goes. Now, the reason they're fighting, there are a few things that are mentioned, but what happened is an event that I can't describe, I'm sorry, happened, and Sarge either went missing or died. And it's a little bit unclear within this comic exactly what happened to her, but she's certainly not around.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, Hunter ends up blaming Turner for this situation. Mm-hmm. There's also a reference to someone who looked like you dying, which is that's a cool forward. And you know, that's something that's going to be realized in a later issue. And John and I spoke a lot about whether we should really include that. And in the end, we decided that kind of thing is the kind of thing that shows that this story is bigger than this issue,
mm-hmm.
right? It's not just at the end of this issue. It's not just, oh, the story ends or even the story doesn't end, but it's the end of the issue. It's this story is taking place. It's a microcosm of huge universe. And you're just seeing this snippet in time, this one moment.
Mm-hmm. Well, see people always get on me because I don't give the vital statistics soon enough. When does this Kickstarter end? At this point, do you know?
Yes, this Kickstarter ends on the 27th of March. That's a Saturday at 9 p.m. UTC, GMT. So that's about 4 p.m. Eastern, if I'm counting right.
Right, right. Okay. Now, I love the female characters, and I know I keep bringing that up, but I just adore interesting female characters because I learn and I'm growing with them, and it's interesting how different they are from each other, and yet how human they are, very real characters to me, which I loved about that. The mech thing was really interesting to me too, because I haven't seen that in your stuff, in your comics before. This, I think, is the first time that I've seen the mech in the comics, unless I'm mistaken about that.
So the mech has appeared in one other comic, but in fairness, it was a very brief appearance, and I would understand why you missed it, because it was our very, very first comic, The Lost and of Stiletto Unit.
Okay.
And it appears towards the end of that comic. Very briefly, you'd kind of have to be looking out for it to realize that that's what it is.
Okay.
That said, I think most people do know, most people who know the role-playing game know that, you know, what a disarm is and why it exists and what it means in the universe.
Mm-hmm.
Because it really is kind of one of those big guns that the GM can bring out when they want something a little more tough to deal with than your average single person.
Okay. So how long have they existed in the Era universe?
Actually, they're a very long time indeed. So before Era of the Consortium was a written role playing game, there was actually a campaign that I ran that was really the basis for starting the rulebook and everything. And Disarm's actually featured in that. One of the characters actually wrestled with one and managed to defeat it despite not being in a disarm. You know, they just rolled extremely well on that occasion and they managed to rip it open.
Okay.
So actually they've been around for sort of 7-8 years. I think that one of the things, and one of the things people have commented about the art style of this, is it feels a little bit 80s anime.
Yes.
Which is exactly what John wanted. That's exactly what he wanted to go for, because for him, that's kind of the golden age of mech, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
So he wanted to go for that feeling because, you know, we knew that this would be quite mech combat heavy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that as a result, sort of the reality of what a disarm does in this comic is maybe slightly different from my very original concept of them, you know, going right the way back. You know, we've kind of enhanced what they can do. Yes, they could punch things. Yes, they were extremely strong. I think they're probably more agile in this comic than I'd initially imagined. But I think that in general, it's come out very nicely indeed with the, you know, this whole aesthetic that we've got going on.
It's really good. I mean, I really enjoyed it. Of course, I like the blue being my favorite color. I like the bluish greenish one.
Hunter. That's Hunter's disarm.
Yeah, that's the one I like the best. But I gotta talk about, you know, the design of the mechas and stuff like that. Who did the visual design work for those characters as well as the humans?
So for the humans, the answer is Leonardo Ardila, who did the artwork for the entire thing. We gave him a rough indication. I believe in this case, we gave him the heights of the characters and what color their hair was and very little else.
Okay.
And literally, he came up with, Hunter's a bit emotional. So John decided, okay, well, she can be a redhead then. You know, and you know, it's kind of that signal that, you know, this character is going to be a little bit more emotional and you know, a bit hot-headed. You know, it's sort of that sort of subconscious signal that everyone knows, and it would apply to a bloke as well, in my opinion. I don't think that's a woman thing at all necessarily.
Right.
And you know, apart from that, he very much did the human side of it. And also what they look like inside the disarms as well. So, you know, there are several shots of sort of their heads inside. And that was never really given to him as a reference. He very much came up with that himself in terms of the design. Wow. Now, in terms of the design of the disarms, that actually goes right the way back to the very early days of the role-playing game. where they were designed by Minji Kim, who was one of my initial concept artists. And then they were built, that design was built on by Wesley Lafleur, who did a lot of sort of the enhanced concepts, building on those initial ideas. And, you know, but between them, they came up with what a disarm actually looks like. And I passed that on to Leonardo. And obviously, he had his own, I guess, style of rendering that, which maybe is not exactly identical. But given that we're talking about one snippet within sort of a 200-year period where these things have existed, I'm sure their design varied a little bit, you know. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I don't feel like it's any kind of a problem in terms of universe integrity. Mm-hmm. So I was happy to let him sort of do his thing and show what he wanted to show within the within the story.
Great, great. Well, I like the design of them. I think one of them carries a hammer.
That's
got
right.
Rockets on the side of it, so when it hits harder. Obviously, with that.
Yeah, so. I imagine so. We don't actually get to see that one hugely in action, because that's actually Sarge's one.
Okay.
So we do get to see it a couple of times. It does turn up, but we don't get to see it doing quite as much action as it does on the front cover, I'm sad to say. Not in this issue. That's still to come. Because, again, you know, exactly what happened to Sarge is not covered within this issue. That's a story that's yet to be told within the arc.
Okay. Very cool. Very cool. Now, this still takes place, though, in the Era universe, as far as, even though it looks a little more anime, it still is part of the whole Era universe thing.
Absolutely. It's part of the Era of the Consortium continuity. Just like the Bug War, which I've spoken to you about before, or Last Stand of Stiletto Unit, or Counting Down from One, or any of those. This is just, obviously, it's a slightly different art style. We like to vary our art style. You know, I mean, you've seen that with our various comics and so on. You know, we like to have a little bit of variety around the art style. But, you know, I think that this is a really nice way of telling this story. It was a great opportunity to get this artist involved again, because he had done artwork for one of the pocket role-playing games, one of the short ones, Ira Balam, which is also a sci-fi. It's another sci-fi game, but with a slightly different focus to Era of the Consortium. So it was really, really nice to get him involved and say, hey, you know what? We think your art style really fits this. Let's go ahead and get you involved and get you working on Disarmed.
Oh, cool. It's really an interesting book. The pages that I saw really sold me on the whole concept and getting in to see the characters and what's happening and what's going on and the mysteries that are involved. I'm really sold on the whole thing and I want to see it, which leads me to ask, you talked about that you wanted this to be a multi-issue story. If this gets the way you want it to be, how many issues will be in Disarmed?
So that's an interesting question, because I'm not sure there is one answer to that.
Okay.
I think that the answer is going to be at least 5.
Okay.
But I think there's also a lot of potential for things beyond that. So while, you know, I think my ideal would be, I think we need 5 issues to tell the story, this arc that we're currently working on that begins and should end with the battle on Aron, where, you know, they're together. But one of the concepts that we were working on, and part of that 5-issue arc, will actually be exploring more worlds in the Consortium. You know, so the idea is that Hunter will actually follow Turner around the Consortium, I guess hunting her, hunting her down. And it's only in this battle where we begin at the beginning of the first issue, she's finally sort of properly caught up with her. But what we do is we start to see Hunter adapting to the situation and building these enhancements to her disarm that we sort of get to see within the combat.
Okay. Very cool, very cool. Because I'm fascinated to see, and I got one more question about Disarmed. Is as far as like time frame goes, is this a current time, or is it a slightly future? Is it something we don't need to know the timeline, where it fits in the time? How would what should we know about when this is taking place?
Right. So to sort of put things in perspective with all the era of the Consortium comics is probably the easiest place to start with answering that. Okay. So the earliest of the era of the Consortium comics is the main body of Counting Down from One. Okay, so they all arrive back in time at the very beginning of the Consortium when the colony ships just crashed and they're turning it into a colony. Okay, so that's that main body of Counting Down from One, and I'll come back to why I said that in a minute, is the very earliest part of the Consortium. You then have to fast forward almost 200 years to get to the Bug War trilogy.
Okay.
Now, all three of those issues are only a few months apart, so they're all within a year of each other. And that Bug War trilogy is kind of the 200 years later. You then have to go forward another 250 years to get to the last stand of Stiletto Unit, which I mentioned earlier.
Right.
Where, you know, that it's a short comic. It's only 12 pages. And it just covers the, you know, this particular unit, which were the inspiration for Era of the Consortium at the end of the day.
Okay.
Now then, if you want to, from where the time travelers in Counting Down from One came from, you find out in the first page that it's time travel, so I'm not really giving spoilers. They actually came from another 500 years beyond that into the future. So it's a very long time scale overall. It's almost 1,000 years.
Mm-hmm.
This happens shortly after the last stand of Stiletto Unit. So it's about 2 or 3 years later. And sort of the very far future hasn't been properly explored yet. So really, this is one of the furthest forward stories that there is in the Consortium.
Interesting. Okay. So this is kind of moving forward as far as other stories go. So that's a cool thing. I'm looking forward to seeing how this goes. Okay. We don't know how many issues are going to be in. This is going to depend on how the story progresses.
I think that five is where I would like to be. Like, if we got to 5 issues mm-hmm. and we had to stop, I would be satisfied that we finished Disarmed. Like, we finished the story of it.
Okay.
I think that there is almost endless potential, because by the time you step out into the wider Consortium, there's really no limit to how many stories you can tell.
Okay. So this is basically the farthest of the future so far in Era of the Consortium.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of 449, 450 CE for anyone who's familiar with the universe. Yeah, that's kind of the end of where I've mapped it in public so far. I've obviously got a lot more planned and a lot more things that are going on and various other things. And we talked previously about A Titan's Rise, the audio drama, of course.
Right.
And that actually, the first half of it happens before this, some time before this, but the last part of it actually goes about a year or two after this ends.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, like when that second season comes out, you know, we'll slightly overlap beyond the end of this.
Oh, cool. Okay, so something to look forward to with that.
I hope so.
Sometimes you put together audio for the visual books. Are you considering doing this as an audio drama, Disarmed?
So Disarmed, I'm not going to rule anything out at all on that. I think it is absolutely doable. I think it could be really good. I may even consider a motion comic. Right now, we kind of need to get the story established. We need to get, you know, get people engaged in the story, and then find out whether it's popular enough that we can actually do that. Because obviously there is a threshold of popularity that we need to be able to do that.
Okay.
I would definitely not rule it out. And I think that it would be very interesting to do.
Okay. So if you like strong female characters like I do, if you enjoy the mech business, the anime sort of feel and stuff like that, this is a book that you want to support. And wait until this interview is over, but get out the Kickstarter and support this, because I think Disarmed is going to be something you're going to enjoy, because I really enjoy it. I think it's just a great, great story. Lots of so much potential and going on. I do like the slow unfolding of the story, the trying to figure out what's going on. It kind of keeps me engaged. I like that, rather than, you know, hitting me with everything in the front and then I know everything that's going to go forward. I like sorting out this kind of story. So that's one of the things I like about your storytelling. And I think it really shows very strongly in this one. You guys have perfected this with this book.
Yeah, I mean, as I said, I don't want to sit here and take all the credit. I want to be very clear. You know, John wrote this. You know, I sat down, I edited, I worked with him a little bit on the writing of it. But for the most part, this was his baby. Leonardo went and picked this up and did an amazing job with the artwork. Keith then went ahead and dealt with the lettering. And then I dealt with I sort of did some tweaks on the lettering. I'm getting a little more involved in the lettering on our comics these days. John used to do it. John's finding his time a little more limited now. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I've stepped in and Keith draws, goes ahead and does the sort of the initial pass, as it were, gets all the word balloons there and puts all the text that we had in the script in them. And then I go through and change 99% of it because I'm not entirely happy.
Well, it's terrific storytelling. It just is. It's gripping. As I go along, just these few pages have got me involved in the story really tremendously. And I want to know what's going to happen, which, of course, makes me ask, when will the whole book be ready? When will it come out?
So it's actually already finished. Sort of in a limited way. I've got a little more lettering tweaking to do. Now, we didn't get to speak about the project that I've just finished, but it's worth mentioning it in passing. I did an anthology comic, which people, you know, indie creators, I invited them to submit to. Mm-hmm. John actually came to me and said, hey, we should put a few pages from Disarmed in there. So the 10 pages that you've read from Disarmed have actually been available to those people who backed that project.
Cool.
Very cool. So as a result, those 10 pages are done because that project is actually going out very shortly as of recording. It'll certainly be out by the time this, you know, anyone is listening to this. So, you know, those 10 pages had to be done because John said, hey, I'd really like to submit Disarmed. I'm really proud of it. I think it's really good. I want to put it in there. So we've gone ahead and put that in there. And then I've just got the remaining sort of 12 pages to deal with. And I'm pretty sure I could do that. Like, what I need to do, I'm pretty sure I could do it within a weekend or so. Just a little bit of tweaking. I don't like that speech bubble. I want that slightly changed or whatever. You know, I think that location is slightly wrong. It's one of those things that's very subjective, I think. And I don't want to belittle Keith in any way, but he and I have very slightly different visions for how it should look or how it should sound, or whether maybe, you know, I might look at a speech bubble and go, okay, well, Keith took what was on the script and John and I, when we wrote it, we were a bit verbose and we'd just like to cut that down to a few words rather than 20 words, you know. Mm-hmm. Certainly John and I are on the verbose side when we write the script. And you know, I mean, I think that that's a very positive thing for one of the writers to then go through and go, you know what we wrote doesn't work. We need to rewrite it. And I've got enough sort of experience with lettering and so on from the various stuff I've done to be able to kind of modify it a bit. We talked at length about lettering for Violet number 2, didn't we?
Yes, we did.
With the shape of the arrows.
Right.
For the word balloons.
Right.
And that was, you know, that was just one of the things that I think, you know, that I can maybe bring to the lettering that someone who's just a separate letterer maybe can't do because they just don't know.
Right.
And I think that's the power of having someone involved in the lettering. You know, obviously, as a writer, you have to learn skills and you have to understand the, you know, the location of word balloons matters and the size of them matters and so on. But I really think that, you know, having that ability to add to, okay, this is the content and here's the stuff that no one could know if they hadn't written it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a really powerful thing to be able to include. So I'm really proud that I was able to sort of get involved and help. Previously, of course, John would have done that and he did very much so in our comics. Mm-hmm. When he was doing the lettering, because again, he was very involved in the writing and the dialogue editing in each case.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. Very cool. Well, it's working well. I mean, it's extremely interesting and very sharply done. And I just think that anybody who enjoys comics like I do is going to really enjoy this. And, you know, even if it's their first experience or exposure to it, I would say that this is a good place to start. It's very strongly done. Excellent.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it is worth saying. I don't think you need any kind of experience with the Era of the Consortium universe to enjoy this book. I'm not sure that's actually what you meant when you said, you know, first yes. exposure to it.
Yes.
Or if you meant first exposure to comics in general. But I would like to think, I remember John quoted to me once, Stan Lee once said, every comic book is someone's first comic book.
Right.
Right. And you know, I'd like to think that if someone were to pick this up and read it, they could understand what was happening and would be drawn into the story just as you, with your massive experience in comics, have been.
I would say extended rather than massive. But anyway, that's in here there. It's called Disarmed. Be sure to support it out on Kickstarter. It's under Shades of Vengeance, right?
It is under SOV Comics.
SOV actually. Comics. Okay. So that's how to find it. Okay.
Now, I'm sure you'll include the link in the notes anyway.
So. Yeah, yeah. Now, let's get on to the other ones. You sent me an audio file to listen to.
I
really enjoyed. And this is the audio version of a comic, right?
It is. And you may have even read the comic. Talk a long time ago, maybe, about the Empowered Volume 1 anthology?
Yes. Yeah,
which included Lacuna, Blue Shift, and Violet.
Right.
And this is, as you say, it is the audio dramatization of the Lacuna comic.
Right.
And this is a very, very special project for me for a variety of reasons. When I may have told the story before, but for anyone who hasn't heard it, when we initially decided that we were going to do a little bit of audio dramatization of comics, we started by doing Counting Down from One, which I mentioned earlier. And actually, ironically, that's going to be the last one to be finished because it seemed to be a bit of an editor killer. It's a very complicated story, and to get it right is certainly very challenging. Now, with that, we reached out to the internet. We offered people at MCM Comic Con back when we were allowed to have in-person conventions.
Mm-hmm.
And we said, hey, if you'd like to be part of this, go ahead and contact us and we'll talk to you. And we had so many applicants. It was 25 in the end. Mm. And not including the ones, because we did say, look, we'd like you to be in London. We'd like to record in person. You know, we're relatively new to this and we'd like to have that sort of directorial control and so on. And you know, that 25 is disregarding the people who sort of didn't read that properly and maybe were in the US or somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
Who, you know, we've done our best to sort of farm out any roles that we can to people who are remote.
Mm-hmm.
But sort of the core of it has always been here in London. Mm-hmm. And we then went ahead and thought, okay, well, let's do some more comics as audio dramas. And I went away and I spent 2 weeks writing all of our comics, basically, into audio dramas. Obviously, Disarmed was not around at that point, so that one didn't get included, as we spoke about a few minutes ago. But Lacuna was most certainly one of them. Mm-hmm. And Lacuna was one where, you know, we got some people on board, and suddenly I had the chance to work with an absolutely brilliant voice actor, Lawrence Masako X Simpson. People might know him as the voice of Goku on Dragon Ball Z Abridged.
Wow.
And you know, he's a fantastic guy. I've known him for years. He actually edited my very first Era of the Consortium Kickstarter video. Because at the time, you know, he wasn't the level of fame that he is now. And, you know, he said, yeah, you know what, I'd be up to do something. And we managed to get him in, and he came and he played Lacuna. And as I said, I've known Lawrence for years. And when I sit down and listen to Lacuna, I don't hear Lawrence, I hear Lacuna. And I picture Lacuna in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
That is how much I think he really captured the essence of that character. And then we had a supporting cast who were just phenomenal. We had Penumbra, played by Molly Corbett. Sorry, I'm bad with names, but I hesitated a moment on that surname. We had Penumbra, and Penumbra is a very central character to that comic. You might remember if you recall the story of reading it. And you've obviously listened to it. But Penumbra is very, very central to this comic, very important. Lawrence went ahead and played Uncle Joe, personally. We had Lucas Fermaniak, who did Evgeny, or Comrade Cupcakes, if you prefer, as he is referred to at one point. And he, again, did a fantastic job. And just between them all, this has actually turned out to be one of my favorites of those that we've done, because their performances are so real. You know, they I understand and I visualize this thing based on the audio. There are even scenes in it that aren't in the comic, and I can visualize them as if they are part of the comic.
See, that's funny, because I told you before we started recording, when I listened to the audio, when I got done with it, I felt like I had seen the visuals with it. So the audio is so together and so on target that by the time I got to the end, I knew in my head what Lacuna looked like and all the characters and the whole setting and stuff like that. It was so well done that I had the visuals supplied by my head as a result of how well it was put together. It's just an amazing, amazing bit of audio.
I mean, that is an incredible complimentary comment. And the only person who really deserves 90% of the credit for that is Adam Durgeman. Now, it might surprise you to know, Wayne, that Adam, when he came on board with this, had never done a project like this before. Like, he'd done some audio editing. He's primarily a voice actor, and he's an excellent voice actor. And you may remember from Violet, you may remember Rampage, the lizard man.
Right.
He plays Rampage in our Violet audio drama, and he does an amazing job. Like, he is absolutely everything you could possibly want. I know that you will love Violet when you hear it, because I know in particular you really enjoyed that story.
Mm-hmm.
But Adam said, you know what? Yeah, I'd love to try my hand at really doing an actual audio drama and learning all of these skills. And with a little direction from myself and with a little help from Zulian Joubert, who's our head of audio here,
mm-hmm.
He has produced, as I said, 90% of the credit for how together the sound is. It belongs to Adam. He's produced an amazing piece of work that really does show you what it's like to live in this universe. You follow Lacuna, Chris, and you're just going, I can almost see over his shoulder,
mm-hmm.
And it really is. It's so well done. And as I say, the credit absolutely belongs primarily to Adam for his work on this. And when you consider that he's never done something like this before, it's doubly incredible.
It's amazing. Now, for people who may not know who Lacuna is, why don't you describe who that character is?
Sure. Lacuna is one of the first Empowered to emerge within the Era of the Empowered universe. And he has the ability to create portals that allow him to translocate quickly. Now, there are various limitations, and it's worth mentioning Alex Labrum at this point, who was the creator of Lacuna, and then I sort of picked up the character and adapted it. But Lacuna was a character and very much looked exactly as he does in these comics, mm-hmm. In the first Era of the Consortium game that we played. Mm-hmm. And, Alex came up with all of these ideas, the pipe, the jumping through the portals, but he also, which is really rare for me in role-playing games, he came up with the limitations that Lacuna exists, has within his powers. So he said, look, when he creates a portal higher than the one he's entering, so he's exiting higher, he's basically making energy out of nothing, so he gets a nosebleed. He'll experience pain as sort of energy is ripped out of him while he's trying to do that. And we even guess in the audio drama, oh, I hate doing that nosebleed every time, kind of thing, as he wipes off his nose.
Mm-hmm.
And, that's something that stayed. He prefers making portals on surfaces because it's easier. He can do it with either the entry or the exit in midair, but it's much more difficult for him to actually do that. Mm-hmm. And this player actually sat down and said, hey, I want limitations on my character so I'm not all powerful. And speaking as a perpetual GM, it's nearly always me that has to do that. You know, I normally have to say, okay, well, your limitation is this and your limitation's that. But, you know, it really has stuck out in my mind. And in this story, he is, it's his very first story. I lie. It's his second story within the canon. Because his first story, actually, he does have, he's one of the few who has an origin story in the actual Era of the Empowered Core rulebook. And, this is not his origin story. We didn't tell that story again. Instead, what we did is we went slightly later. So he's a, you know, he's a vigilante. He fights crime. And he's pretty brutal in the way he does it. You know, he has a metal pole and he hits people over the head and he, you know, breaks necks and collarbones and shoulders and, you know, caves people's heads in sometimes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And he, you know, he truly is quite brutal in some cases. Mm-hmm. And he's also very inexperienced. Mm. You know, he's a teenager, so he thinks he knows everything and in fact doesn't know anywhere near as much as he thinks he does. But the problem is that he's spending so much time out being a vigilante that his grades are slipping and, you know, his uncle... His parents died when he was very young, and his uncle is trying to look after him, and he's saying, look, I can't cope. You know, it's a very real story in that sense that, you know, this is a single parent who's not even really a parent, mm-hmm. who's saying, look, I can't cope. And he has these doubts. He's a very human individual, is Uncle Joe. And he says, yeah, I mean, I'm considering sending you to this remedial home for boys. You know, I can just about afford it if I do overtime 3 nights a week.
Right.
Kind of thing. And he's saying, you know, I don't want to do this, but you know, I'm worried that I can't be around enough trying to support you to get your grades back on track. And you know, I promised Abby, my sister, that I would raise you, you know, if anything happened to her. And then something happened to her and I didn't realize what I was getting into. You know, I was only sort of 18, 19, 20 when you were 8 and this happened. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's lost. You know, Uncle Joe doesn't have the answers any more than any other parent does, you know. Mm-hmm. And Lacuna obviously reacts very badly to this. You know, Chris, you know, he just feels like Uncle Joe's giving up on him and he just decides... Yeah, I'm going to go out. And that's when he encounters Penumbra. And Penumbra is almost playful with her powers. You know, she's such a contrast to this very stark, I use my powers to fight crime vigilante. Penumbra's almost playful. You know, she is extremely competent at using her powers and runs circles around Lacuna like he does not stand any chance. If they were to fight, not that they do, but if they were to really fight, he would not stand a chance. Not at this stage. And then we're going to skip forward the next time we see him in comics, and I'll talk about that in a minute. But and the situation's a bit different. But, you know, he encounters Penumbra and... It leaves him thinking, you know, maybe going off on my own is the right answer. And what teenager hasn't considered that at some point, mm-hmm. you know, at least in passing. Mm-hmm. And he thinks maybe going off on my own is the answer. And he decides that he is in fact going to do it. And I'm going to stop with the spoilers now. You know, that's kind of the end of the first half. There's a lot that happens after that.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, he decides that he is in fact going to go off. You know, Chris Jameson died today. They'll call me Lacuna.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, from there, you know, we experience sort of an adventure and even further doubts. Because, again, I think one of the things that characterizes Lacuna for me is an uncertainty around the actions that he's taking. You know, like, he doesn't have this... Violet knows what she needs to do. Blue Shift... knows that she can do whatever it is that's necessary. Lacuna, he just kind of wants to. He doesn't have that that confidence in himself that these slightly older characters, you know, not a lot older, you know, five years older maybe, but they've, you know, they've reached that point where they're living relatively independently anyway, more so than Lacuna is with Uncle Joe. And I think that for me, that's one of the things that characterizes Lacuna. He thinks he knows everything, but he doesn't really feel like he knows everything. And he doesn't really have that certainty within. And that's one of the things that I think makes him an interesting character. And then when you juxtapose that with Penumbra, who, and Molly did such a great job with Penumbra. You know, I've already talked about how Lawrence did with Lacuna, but Molly did such a great job with Penumbra. She is so confident. She is so arrogant. She is so certain of everything that she does.
Mm-hmm.
To juxtapose that with Lacuna just makes it a really interesting dynamic between those two characters. And it's one that we enjoyed so much that, you know, I've been teasing that crossover to you for years now, Wayne.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we're now, I'm just finishing up page 10 of that crossover.
Oh, boy.
Page 10 of the first issue of that crossover, I should say. We're hoping it'll be 3 issues.
Oh, boy.
And Penumbra goes and reaches out to Lacuna again. And, you know, Lacuna's response is, "You want my help? Well, last time I helped you, I ended up in the hospital for 3 months. I'm thinking, give me a good reason."
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you know, he's not entirely got over the events of both this comic and also this this audio drama, which is based around the comic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's one of those things that is a transformative experience for Chris Jameson, Lacuna. That he's going to carry with him right the way through to the end of his storyline, I think.
Great. Well, that's great. It's going to be fun to read. It's going to be great. Now, is the Lacuna audio, does that have a Kickstarter going for it, or what's the story with that?
So by the time that this goes out, it will do.
Okay.
You won't have seen it yet because it's actually launching on the 1st of March.
Okay. So, yeah.
So with any luck, by the time it goes out, we're actually talking about it's funded. Right.
Oh,
but that's not to say that you shouldn't go and get it, because as you said, you know, you listened to it, you loved it. If it's funded, that means it's definitely going out to backers. So to me, that's even more reason you should go and get hold of that, because I'm able to. The thing is, you know, you pointed out I run a lot of Kickstarters. There's a reason for that, because any other platform, you know, Audible, for example, for audio, they take 40% of what the purchase price is, minimum 40 to 60%.
Right.
Kickstarter takes 10%.
Right. That's much better.
The thing is that where the money goes, it doesn't go in my pocket, or, you know, there is no corporate person for it to go into. The money on all of our audio dramas gets split between the people who put the work in, right? So Adam will get a massive chunk for his, you know, of whatever profit we make, Adam will get a massive chunk for his work on doing the editing. Molly and Lawrence, the main voice actors, they'll get a very sizable chunk as well. Yes, a little bit will go to me because I've been the director. You know, I wrote it. You know, so I'll get a little bit as well. But it gets distributed, sort of each role that is fulfilled by an individual person has a percentage of the profit that's linked to it that everyone who comes into one of these projects and does the work knows about ahead of time. So, you know, we say, okay, look, we're going on Kickstarter, we get what we get, and you get X percent of the profit because this is the job that you're doing. Mm. And I think that's a fantastic way of doing it, and that's why I would encourage anyone who's listening to this who feels like they're a little bit inspired by it, please go check out Lacuna, find out, you know, if it's something you'd like. There are loads of samples that are linked on the Kickstarter. And if you think it's something you'd like, and you think it's something you'd like to hear more of, as you pointed out yourself, Wayne, we have many comics that we have not yet turned into audio dramas. Mm-hmm. And we have a lot of appetite. I actually just had an email from one of our regular voice actors yesterday asking whether there was any more work yet. I know that this thing's happening. You know, is there anything I can do in the meantime? You know, I'd love to do some more and so on. Everyone who's involved in this absolutely loves it. And it's not about the money. But for me, it's about making sure that those people who do the work get the money. Right. And this isn't about, you know, oh, Ed's going to be super rich from it. It's not why I'm a creator. I'd like to be compensated for my time. I will be compensated for my time proportionately to everyone else who put the work in. Mm-hmm. Yes. Beyond that, I'm creating because I love it. And anyone who looks at any of our goals, I mean, you look at the Disarmed goal and it's £300. Everyone knows that you can't make a 22-page comic for £300. That's what, $420 or something? No. Yeah. No. Like, that's not why we created the comic. That's not why it exists that way. You know, we have put our own time and money into this to make it happen. And yeah, we'd like to see a little bit of return on that investment. We'd like to see it go out into the world. We'd like to see people enjoy it. And the more money that we can get off the Kickstarter, the more profit that we can pass on to the people who really did make it happen.
So support it. Get out there and put your money where this is, because this is, you're going to get a great return for it. It's going to be terrific, because you guys haven't done anything that I haven't loved so far. It's just been a wonderful.
You keep saying that, and I'm sort of crossing my fingers every time you say it, but you're never going to say anything else. You know, I'm always. So there is some degree to which I look at a comic and I go, right, if I put this out, is this going to be the one that Wayne says, you know, you know what, I'll be honest, I was a little disappointed in this one. It wasn't up to, no.
Well, I doubt that's going to happen, but we'll see how the thing's going. Now, we should, of course, get to the third one. There's a third Kickstarter that's going to be going on when this is this comes out, right?
There is, yeah. And that is the Erizone.
Okay.
Now, this one is more, I'm going to be quite brief on this one. Okay. You know, people must be getting tired of listening to me by now. the Erizone is a zine. It's part of Zine Quest. So we're recording towards the end of February. This is going to come out a little later. But we are, you know, Zine Quest is something that I like to do every year. The Erizone is my little contribution to that, which is sort of bringing material for all of the era role-playing games. So any role-playing games fans out there who are listening, you know, we have a setting neutral bestiary for sci-fi monsters, because there are so many fantasy bestiaries out there, and I've never seen a sci-fi one. Hmm. Not like a free one, right? Hmm. And for a while we there are actually 20 entries of this on our Patreon for free. Hmm. So anyone who wants to can go to our Patreon and download those for free. They're not part of the charged or paywalled material. You can just go get those if you're a role player who likes sci-fi. And these were written by a molecular biologist, really nice guy, who loves sci-fi. And we did a little bit of riffing on the Star Trek, the original series, and, you know, all kinds of sort of from, you know, the 1960s view of sci-fi all the way through to kind of the very modern, you know what, this is a disease, it does this, it, you know. And there's a wide variety of things, therefore, for you to play with. And then on top of that, you know, if you're a role player, and you're interested in any of the games that run on the Era D10 rule set, there's material for every single game in every issue. 10 games at the moment. But when I was running this time last year, it was actually 8 games. So actually it grew during the year to include some more games. You know, we'll do things like sessions or new enemies that you might have, sort of NPCs or monsters or whatever. Or we'll do maybe even stories, like just fiction for the universe. Or we'll do a guide to creating a character, you know, within that, that's maybe not more in-depth, but maybe more specific than what's in the core rulebook. Or we'll do, you know, we do stuff like GM toolkits. Okay, so if you're a GM and you want to build a combat scenario, these are the things you need to worry about. And if you're going to tweak your enemies to make them more difficult. These stats will make them massively more powerful, and these stats will make them a little bit more powerful, and these are somewhere in the middle. So, you know, be careful what you change, because, you know, you might not do a lot, or you might do way more than you expected. So it's really about trying to give a little more information to the people who want to play the era games, particularly GMs, but it's not unique to GMs. There are new character options, you know, character creation options or equipment that players can use. We did some empowered power trees. We've done this a few times actually, where, you know, we sort of do power trees that maybe weren't included in the rule book specifically. It's one of those really exciting projects that is what people outside our team make it more than it is what we make it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're aiming for, you know, 4 issues again this year. The fund goal will be 2. That's what we did last year, and it worked very nicely. And then we actually ended up running a second Kickstarter mid-year, because obviously it launched around the time that COVID hit. People were very worried, very short of money, and very concerned in 2020, sort of February, March 2020. People were a bit concerned. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we ran another one sort of in July, August, and we got a lot of support there, and we were able to up that to 4 issues. My hope is that we'll just hit 4 issues outright this time. Mm-hmm. But that's what the Era Zone's all about. I think it's a fun little project. It produces, you know, you can get hold of all of the issues that we produce for £5 in digital format. It really is not expensive. We don't want it to be expensive. It's a zine. It's supposed to be, I'd almost say cheap and cheerful, but I think that undersells the level of quality that we have that you can see if you scroll down in that Kickstarter. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that we deliver a really good quality product, especially for that price.
Great. Well, it looks terrific. I mean, what I've seen of it looks just fantastic and stuff. You said something that I didn't realize is that you have a Patreon. And so while I was listening, I was able to listen and go out to patreon.com and sign up to be a Patreon, because I have not done that for you guys. I haven't done that with you guys. And as much as I enjoy your stuff, I figure I should get on board and put my money where my mouth is and get that support going. So you got 3 Kickstarters going on right now as this posts. And, you know, I have to tell you, Ed, you guys do wonderful stuff. And it's the audio dramas get me. The only thing that you guys do that I just don't have time for is the gaming. If I was into the gaming, I would love it. But all the stuff that you do, just as high quality stuff, it just makes me so happy to see somebody actually telling stories and enjoying the process. I love that, because, you know, you and I well know that the cost of doing this stuff can be prohibitive, and that you don't let that stop you, and you use Kickstarter and other methods available to you like Patreon and do those things to make them happen. I just have to support something like that, especially with the super level of quality you guys make. So, again, people, it's Shades of Vengeance. There's 3 Kickstarters going on. If you're good at this kind of stuff and you love Kickstarter, now's the time to get out and support all 3 of them. And they're not up right yet. That's why I haven't supported them. At least I think one of them I tried.
Two of them are now up. So,
they are, when we're talking.
When we're talking, but they'll all certainly be up by the time
this posts.
By the time this posts, yeah.
So when I get done talking here, guess where I'm going? I'm going straight to Kickstarter so I can support these things. And I highly encourage you to do the same. So, Ed, all I can tell you is you're doing wonderful stuff. Now, why don't you, before we go, tell people how they can find out about Shades of Vengeance.
So the obvious place is our website, www.shadesofvengeance.com. As you've mentioned, Wayne, our Kickstarters are actually a great way. Obviously, on a Kickstarter, you have to express everything about the project. So if there's any specific project, you know, if you've listened to me and you want to know more about Lacuna or Violet, the thing to do is hop on our Kickstarter. In Violet's case, it would be, I think that one's SOV Comics offhand. There are a couple of Kickstarter accounts, so I have to double check. But you know, you can hop on the Kickstarter for that thing and find out all about it. I mean, searching Violet Kickstarter would probably bring it up, I imagine. Our website, our Kickstarters. You can find us on Facebook at Shades of Vengeance. Twitter at Shades_of_Venge. Because unfortunately there's a character limit. Instagram, Shades of Vengeance. YouTube, Shades of Vengeance. And you know, if you're not into the gaming, but you'd really like to experience some stories like Wayne, but you've got a little bit of time, they're actually half-hour sort of sessions up on YouTube. So, you know, you can sit in. Obviously, you're not playing, but you can sit in and enjoy those stories that we are telling as a group. You know, there are tons of them up there, sort of literally hundreds of sessions that we've done and recorded and put up on the YouTube for people to enjoy. So you can check that out. And finally, we've got a Discord link as well. I mean, I'm not going to read it out on the air because I think that's probably a bit ridiculous. I'm sure everyone knows that those are quite hard to say, shall we say. They're just a mixture of letter and numbers. But I'll make sure I give it to Wayne so that it can go in the notes.
Okay, sounds good. And Ed, it's always a pleasure to talk with you. Always a great time. Time just flies by when I'm talking with you. There's so many good things that we're talking about. But again, get out there and support Shades of Vengeance, the three Kickstarters to support. And I'll be heading as soon as I can find them. I get done with the recording. I'm going to be out after the two. And then the third one by the time this posts. So believe me, if you want quality storytelling, this is the place to go.
Thank you so much for having me once again. I really appreciate it. It's always great being on, being on with you, Wayne. I mean, as you said previously, you know, John was the first person that you you met who had listened to your podcast. Yours was the first podcast I started listening to regularly after John put me onto it. And it really was like I was kind of a podcast novice and. I just, you know, I really, it's such an honor to be on. It really is.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, I'm flesh and blood. I can be ignored. I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast. So you can keep reading your comics.
And that's it for this episode. Be back next time. I'll have another great interview with an excellent comics creator. Something I'm sure you won't want to miss. But until then, keep reading your comics.